Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered, these tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. Thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it out, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of this worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. Also on that page, you'll find links to a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. If you choose to listen to those, they can serve as a valuable tutorial for how to get the most benefit out of this powerful tool in a variety of situations and themes. There are also a whole list of other worksheets on that very webpage. It's staggering to me at times how much quality material is available on that website, absolutely free. So feel free to explore and or download the app from the App Store. And we encourage people to do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, you may call us at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And that is one of the things we really enjoy when people do, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, and all of the time, intelligence, money, and energy that Michael and Jeannie spend on this work is to be of service. So please let us know, how can we be of service to you as we continue to explore things like the body of tools that Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice make available. And we explore, as we did last year, the Course in Miracles. And as we explore, as we're doing this year, the Way of Mastery. All of it is designed, in one way or another, to be a service. And we hope that is the case for you. As we continue, we've been working with the Way of Mastery, as I just mentioned, and yesterday we wrapped up a review of Lesson 16 in the Way of Mastery. If you have questions or comments about any of that, there are archives of the shows, the first hour of the shows since January 10th, are being made available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. The full archive of the two-hour sessions of these shows is available through Blog Talk Radio at whyagain.org. But specifically in reference to the work we're doing to read, comment on, and review The Way of Mastery, those hour-long clips are available at MindShiftersAcademy.org website. So, what's on your mind? How can we support you today? What would be of service to you? Shall we go back and review lesson 1 or 3 or 7 or 15 or 16, which we've just done reviewing? Or should we go on to lesson 17? 563-999-3581. Open for comments, open for questions, open for answers. I had the same kinds of hesitations about Lesson 17 and presenting it in this format as I did with Lesson 16. I view it as a way to conceptualize a process that is quite literally beyond our mind's ability to comprehend. So it's like a koan or a parable. I don't present this as, here's the truth of your life, here's what's actually happened, because I can't know that, and I don't think any human can know that. And yet the value in opening up to thoughts like this, stories like this, images like this, metaphors like this, is that we can begin to question in different ways, more deeply, everything we've ever come to believe. You know, I remember as a child being taught as a Catholic, all of these things, that this is absolutely the truth and this is what God has told us is the truth, etc. And there were periods of my life where I didn't have any reason to question any of that. I had no basis for questioning that the people that gave me life and were responsible for my physical survival would lie to me or would be wrong, and they told me, here's the absolute truth. Come to find out, much of what they were telling me as an absolute truth was designed as a parable or a story or a metaphor that was trying to give my child's mind, my very immature, naive, developing mind, a way to start grasping concepts that were completely beyond my ability to comprehend. So rather than being a literal truth, they were a mechanism to assist me in exploring and questioning and growing. But it wasn't presented that way. Presented as a cold, hard fact and one that I needed to accept or be punished for not accepting. So this work switches that up. This work says it is highly preferable, in the short and the long run to question everything, to bring everything to observation and questioning in your life, moment to moment. And we're grateful to everyone who's joining us on this journey, in this process. As we learn how to question, how to be open to questions in a more, I'll say, consistent, vigilant, present moment experience, day in and day out. Right? This is not about I go on a weekend retreat, and while I'm there, I suspend all disbelief, and I buy everything they're selling me. And then I go home and I try and convert my family and friends. Right? There's nothing in this work about believing, buying into, converting. Everything in this work is about living in the question. And if there's anything we can do to help you live more in the question, live more in the moment of vigilant observation, please let us know. That's the goal with this work. Whether we're presenting something from Guy Finley or David White or Dale Allen Hoffman, our stated intended purpose is to be questioning for ourselves and to help other people question openly, vigilantly, consistently as they live their lives day in and day out. Area code 541, you're in the air.
This is Celinda.
Welcome.
Welcome. I'm out in my garden watering, so I hope that's not going to disturb our conversation. I just wanted to give you feedback that might be helpful. Is the water bothering you, sir?
No, as long as you're speaking into the phone, I can hear you.
Oh, perfect. I'll turn the volume down on it, then it won't be so loud. I've been reflecting. I spent quite a few years in Al-Anon and in Overeaters Anonymous. And I keep coming back to some little sayings they have. And one of them that they said quite often was, would you rather be loved or would you rather be right? And I've modified it, changed it a little bit to where now it is, would I rather be loved or would I rather be right? And I found that I can put anything in there. Would I rather be kindness or would I rather be right? Would I rather be contented or would I rather be right? And I just wanted to share that because sometimes I can lose myself in the rightness or wrongness of how to walk the Aramaic path. And when I get really confused, I just ask myself, it's very simple. It doesn't have to be hard. And so I give my little girl a talk and remind her. And I just wanted to share that. That and my desire to live in the question, which I see as an aspect of walking the middle path. Allowing, so I just thought I'd share that with you because it's this and that for me, and I'm learning more and more that when I get into wanting to be right and don't realize it, I'm in this or that. I'm in some sort of survival perception that I don't have any choice or that I think my will is tied up in that. It's really about my will And my willingness can only be as willing as I am willing to trust, which is kind of a paradox or a koan in itself, if that makes any sense.
Well, it is, you know, it's in line with what we're talking about here, is that it isn't about being right that we're talking about. It's about being in observation. Right. And this Guy Finley has a variety of ways to talk about it. We get angry, we get frustrated, and the more angry and frustrated we get, the more solid we feel. And we're conditioned to believe that the more angry we are, the more solid we feel, that that's an indication of us being more right than somebody else. And he says, my anger doesn't mean I'm right. My anger only means I don't know what rightness is. And other ways to talk about it include, I'm not interested in being right. I'm interested in being aligned with what is right. Be able to observe it, be in the flow of it. Let the truth of things act on me rather than me deciding I'm going to force the world to be the way I want it to be. All of these things are just different ways of talking about what's the attitude that I can take that puts me in alignment with the flow of life right now as it's unfolding. And it frequently won't go in the way that my conscious logical mind thinks it should. And I probably won't be able to know how that's better for me than what I wanted to unfold anyway until after the fact, right? I am rarely gifted the foresight to be able to understand it. When I'm 8 years old and my parents force me to go apologize to the neighbor and, you know, tell them that I will pay for the window I broke accidentally, and I'm enraged at my parents, I don't have the ability in that moment to see how this is going to be good for me. And yet, that really is the best thing for my parents to do for me. It really is counterproductive for them to shield me from the consequences of my actions and or decide to pay for the window for me and or let me stay at home and hide from the neighbors the fact that I was the one that did the action that resulted in the broken window. But that's exactly what I want them to do, right? So what I want at certain levels of my development is not in line with what's good for me, even though my thoughts are that's what's good for me. But that's true only because I can't know the depth and the breadth of all of these various factors about life and existence that are all coming to bear on me, directly or indirectly. I can't know it. So we grow up and we get an education and we get a certificate and we get a degree and we get life experience of 20 or 30 or 40 years and we go to a trade school and we think we know, and we can't know. It's the same thing. When I'm 60 years old, there are as many or more things that I can't comprehend or know about than there were when I was 8. And that's the core of this work, helping me wake up and realize the wisdom in the old ancient Eastern philosophies that say things like, he who says he knows doesn't know. She who says she doesn't know, she's on to something. That never ends. The wisest of masters say, I don't know. The wisest of masters teach by asking questions, whether it's Socrates or it's any Eastern tradition teacher. I remember reading about one great guru who his entire teaching for his students was every day asking them, who are you? The same question. That's the only question he ever asked in a teaching mode. Who are you? So if I think I know who I am, I'm walking around with blinders on, and earplugs in. If I think I know, I don't know. I'm made up stuff. I'm creating the illusion of strength and knowledge and security and safety, but there might be strength and knowledge and security and safety, but they don't exist the way I've conceptualized them.
And it seems that when I get into that right-wrong position, I'm actually reverting to that little child he doesn't know. If everything is in the present moment anyway, then I am choosing to let the little child who doesn't know run the show. Carolyn May said something that always stuck with me. And she said the will, the fifth chakra, is like the child. The sixth chakra is like the father, sixth, maybe seventh, I don't know. And this is all metaphor, of course. And the fifth chakra, the fourth chakra, the heart chakra, the exact center between the upper and the lower chakras, of which the lower three are the subconscious and the upper three are the conscious, according to her perception, then it's like the mother and the father are at odds with each other, the heart and the head. And so what they have is an unruly child, a lost child, a little juvenile delinquent child. And it makes me laugh. It makes me smile because, boy, I certainly have an active one of those in my will area, and to realize that it's because I don't trust, because I haven't experienced letting go, because it feels so unsafe in a given area. I have in others, and so I don't trust. And if I don't trust, then my will is going to stay in survival. And if I do, and this is just all play now, Dr. Kim, I'm just playing with this. Then if I do come by canceling goals to see that I can trust, then my will falls into line. So it is part of being gentle with myself. And as I realize more and more that life is very simple and at the same time a great mystery, which I will never understand, it's helpful. I am amazed at how willful my little child can be. I laugh. And then I say, well, when you're ready, we'll continue on.
Well, I'm glad that's working for you. I think that there are an infinite number of ways to come up with these conceptualizations, these stories, these images, these parables. And what's most important is that we recognize that that's a moving target for our conscious logical mind. It's not a literal description of how the world works or who's right and who's wrong. And the more we can stay tuned into that, the better our lives get, because we stay more awake and aware and in the observer mode.
And the observer is what I was not taught. You know, I was taught it was all about the intellect, all about belief, all about doctrine, dogma, all about not that the scientific method was a theory being tested or untested, but that the scientific method was, once you tested it and it stood the test, then it was fact. It was true. You were home free, until I realized by just exploring what is the scientific method that, oh yeah, it stands until something comes along, new information, whatever, that says, no, this is, the world is not flat. So anyway, it's hopefully I'm laughing more.
Well, all right. Here's to that. Anything else to share with us today?
No, it's just a beautiful morning, and I'm doing what I love the best, which is to cultivate my garden as I cultivate my soul. And whatever feels right, I'm on it with you, Dr. Kim. You just go for it. I trust you implicitly.
All right. Blessings. Thanks for being here and participating. I'll mute you so you can continue to listen. And we have time for more comments and questions and or whatever the next phase of this journey might be. 563-999-3581. I had a number of people in my caseload in this past week that are just right up against it, hitting their head against the brick wall for them knowing how life should be, and life having the audacity to go in a different direction or to be something else altogether. And some of them are responding with rage, and some of them are responding with terror, and some of them are responding with hurt, and some of them are responding with confusion. And I think that's a pretty standard response pattern for every human being. I don't know, but I think that's pretty common for every human being. I know it is very common for most of the people I've worked with in the past 48 years as a therapist. And what's highly preferable to that, in my personal experience, is getting soft, getting to be like water, to fill the form, to go with the flow, to release this goal to be right or this need to be right. And there's a Peter Mayer song where it talks about God is a river. And we are like swimmers, and we're in the river, and we're on the bottom, and we're holding on to these rocks, and you know that we can survive in the water. We're like the mermaid people, mer people. But we cling to the rock on the bottom because that's our safety and security, and this rushing water in the river passes overhead, and then wherever the current gets strong, it feels like it's going to rip us away from our safety and security. And the point of the story is God is not the rock. That's not our safety and security. God is the river. Life is the river. And those of us who are clinging to a rock as though it's God, this stable, unchanging, physically palpable experience of the bottom of the river or the rock, we cling to that and we convince ourselves that that's our safety and that's our best way to survive. And we're missing the flow of life. And the song lyrics talk extensively about how God is the river, so let go, swimmer. And being able to live in the question, being able to entertain some of the koans and metaphors and images that were in The Way of Mastery so far, especially Lesson 16, and what's coming up in Lesson 17, being able to let our conscious logical mind play with some of these images and ideas and understand that we don't know and we can't know and we won't know in the way that our conscious logical mind wants us to. And that's okay. It's not just okay, it is preferable. It is, you know, the capital T truth, that you know, our core nature, which is unknowable to our conscious logical mind, is the only thing that doesn't change, and everything else, as Way of Mastery says over and over again, everything that is born in time ends in time. And if I create a sense of safety or security based on anything physical, anything that's born in time, whether it's my physical body or the house I'm living in or the car I'm driving or the person, the physical body of the person that I feel I'm in a relationship with, if I'm clinging to any of those things and I'm building my sense of safety on any of those things, I'm setting myself up for a major fall, a major disappointment, and a series of traumas, because, you know, as this, what we just finished saying, everything that's born in time ends in time. Everything in the physical is time-bound, is temporary. And that which you truly are, your true nature, is something that your intellectual mind cannot know, cannot experience. And for some people, that's a terrifying thought, right there, just all by itself, terrifying thought. But that's because they're using it to generate terror, and they're using it because they're grinding away with their conscious logical mind that is incapable of experiencing their true nature. So, thanks for being here for the ride. Thanks for at least trying to stretch your mind a little to understand that nothing that we're talking about in the physical is intended to be a literal description. And everything that we're using our words to talk about is just pointing towards an experience. We're simply pointing towards an experience. We are not trying to say, we're right, this is the truth, this is literally who you are, what you are, because the words can only point at the thing. Krishnamurti would say over and over again, the word is not the thing. Your thoughts about the thing are not the thing. Your thoughts about yourself are not your true self. So with all of that in mind, we'll dip our toe a little bit here into Lesson 17, the title of which is The Journey of the Soul. And the text reads, "Beloved and holy friends, we come forth in this lesson to yet again remind you that all that you think, all that you see, and all that you do is not the result of that which comes to you, but rather that which comes from you. For always and forever, the world you perceive is uncaused by anything but yourself." So that sentence is worth repeating. It comes from the very first lesson, page 5, the first axiom, where it says, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And here we are in Lesson 17. It finds a way to rephrase it and says, for always and forever, the world you perceive is caused only by yourself. The way it's written in the book is, the world you perceive is uncaused save by yourself, except for by yourself. It's important to understand that they're not saying the world as it actually is caused by you. But it says quite clearly the world you perceive. And we've talked about this at length on this internet show for years. Michael Rice found a CIA website page where they talk about a book that has a chapter in it, I believe, and the chapter of the book is titled, Why Can't We See What Is There to Be Seen? And the CIA is doing extensive research on perception. Why would they want to do research on perception? Well, because if they have agents out in the field trying to gather intelligence and information, and there's three or four of them reporting on the same series of events, and they have conflicting reports, but they know these people aren't lying. They're all working, you know, trying to uphold the Constitution and protect their country and all of that, but they come back with these contradictory reports. And the CIA wants to find out, okay, how could they be watching the same series of events and come up with these very different observations or descriptions? And that led them to start doing research on perception, and lo and behold, what they discovered, and one of the summary statements they make is something to the effect of, your brain, your perceptive process does not record reality. It creates, it constructs a reality. This is why you can be in a room with five people and you can come away with a very different experience of what happened in that room than any of the other people in the room. Because your experience is created by you. Forever and for always, the world you perceive is caused by nothing but yourself. The text goes on and says, this is why it is always true that freedom is closer to you than your own breath. That freedom is the reality of your being. You have the infinite capacity. This is a sidebar. The way I have formulated saying this from these teachings and others over the years, and I say this to people on a regular basis. Sometimes I say it in therapy, and they say, wait a minute, can I write that down? So I literally printed it out and have little strips of paper on my desk to hand to somebody. Because to me, it makes perfect sense. It's stated in English. It's a simple statement. It's a little bit too many words. It's a little bit too complex for some people. And probably it goes against what they've been trained to believe. But my formulation of it is this. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment that creates your experience of life. It's not what comes to you, it's what comes from you that creates your experience of life. And there is really solid research from a physiological perspective that says the information that goes into creating pictures in your mind, 80% of it comes from your memories in your past, and only about 20% of it comes from the light waves that are stimulating the rods and cones in your eyes. So when you see somebody and you see them as ugly, or you see them as attractive, or you see them as intelligent, that judgment, that physical visual impression, 80% of it is coming from your past experience and judgments, and only 20% of it is coming from the light waves that are bouncing off of that person or situation and striking your eyes. And I'll say once again, you can go to the YouTube channel and type in Anil Seth, A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H is his last name, and you can search for perception or hallucinating perception and see a whole host of videos and lectures he's given on the research they're doing on perception. And there's the hard science validation that we are creating our perception. Our perception is not recording reality, it's constructing reality. And that's one of the reasons why in Dr. Michael Rice's work, he takes so much energy to differentiate between the words actuality and reality. And he says actuality is what's out there, what's in the world. It's the energy field that we live and swim in. And reality are the pictures and interpretations that our minds create about that actual world. So, to recap, the paragraph says, this is why it is always true that freedom is closer to you than your own breath, and that that freedom is the reality of your being. That freedom is that which is realized without effort. Freedom is realized when you decide to accept the truth that is true always. Here's that truth. Quote, I and my Creator are one. I am that creative energy which I am. Close quotes. You are consciousness. Your true nature is awareness. You are that which witnesses. You are that which experiences. You are that which pays homage to the one thing that the Creator has created, Christ, which means the anointed. You have been anointed since before the beginning of all worlds with that which the Father is, the Creator is, awareness and pure intelligence. You have been given awareness and pure intelligence since before the creation of all worlds, and that is your true nature. You have been anointed with the ability to choose what you would wish to perceive, and thereby you are imbued with the power to create. You abide freely in each moment. Now just try to breathe and soften and notice your body's response to this, and notice the distance between this and most of the things that you've been conditioned into, trained into, taught in your family and your cultural life experience. You are imbued with the power to create, and you abide freely in each moment. And I would say here, add to that, freely in each moment you abide with the ability to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment, and it is only the focus of your conscious awareness and the interpretation you place on things that you think you perceive that creates your experience of life moment to moment. The text goes on and says, this freedom is completely unobstructed and unchangeable forever. It is in your freedom that you think what you think. You see what you see. You feel what you feel. Even in your third dimensional reality. At any moment, you are perfectly free to see the radiant beauty of the actual world pervading all things, pervading even your own consciousness. Just as you are also free to see fear. Couple lessons back, one of the lessons is titled, Love or Fear? The Choice is Yours. That's lesson 15. Here's a repetition of that same observation. You are completely free in each moment to choose to see love or fear. At any moment, you are perfectly free to see the radiant beauty of the real world pervading all things. I substituted the word actual for the word real here to try and clear this up. The reality is the picture my mind creates. The actuality is what's there. Even your own consciousness is pervaded by the radiant beauty of creation. And you are free to see that in each moment, just as you are free to choose to see something fearful, to generate the energy of fear. Every one of us has that freedom. We may not be practiced at exercising it. We may not have been taught that that is the truth. And yet, it still remains the truth. The text goes on and says, in our last session, we began to explore, by way of analogy, that which is transpired and has transpired that brought you into the experience of being a spark of the divine, an aspect of the totality that brought you to the place of the soul. And then the soul condenses and falls into what you have called your physical world. And there is where you find yourself, right here, right now, surely the product of the world around you, surely the product of your parents, surely the product of forces beyond your control. And yet, the whole while, you have remained exactly as you are, the witness, the seer, pure consciousness, the capital S self. So in this lesson, we're going to speak specifically about this one lifetime that you are living now. Beloved friends, in the moment prior to your incarnation, you were in existence, abiding with perfectly clear awareness within a state or quality or dimension of consciousness. It is true that even that was the result of choices made in the past. But here we wish to speak in this lesson of your current incarnation, this one incarnation. However, before we do that, it's recommended that you take a few moments to pause and allow the body to relax with a few deep breaths. Let go of any gripping in the mind. Let the things that need to be done sit on the shelf for a while. And then when you've done that, come back to this lesson when you're ready to continue. Beloved friend, imagine abiding without a physical body and yet having awareness. This book says it's true. And yet, your conscious logical mind can only make up stories about it. You can't experience it. And even if you have experienced it sometime in the past, your present incarnation in the body, in the carnal, prevents you from having that experience now or being able to have words that can express it. So just stretch your mind a little and imagine what it might be like to be without a physical body and yet having awareness. Now, it shouldn't be that difficult if you take into account what happens when you sleep each night. You do this when you sleep at night. You have your dreams. You have your nightmares. You have your hopes and fears. You have your mulling over issues from work and awakening with a solution to a problem at work. Yet when that's happening, you don't have awareness of your physical body. You actually even do it when you daydream. You space out. It occurs occasionally while making love and while you're watching television. In fact, each and every one of you experiences that quality of awareness several times during each and every day when you, quote, forget yourself, close quotes. That is, you forget your embodied existence. The difference between that in your world, the difference is that in your world, when you, quote, come back to your senses, close quotes, that is, you come back to the embodied existence. You don't stay in the dream state. Whereas before you came into being, in the physical being, you existed for an extended period or an infinite period in spirit only. Imagine, though, that a state in which there is simply no physical form and you're abiding as consciousness itself, and yet you have awareness. Oh, yes, you have form, but that form or energy has not condensed into the third dimension. You have friends. That is, you have other consciousnesses with which you are in perfect communication. Just imagine what it would be like to be an angel, a spirit, a consciousness without a body, and being able to have communication with other friends without bodies. Many of you that are hearing this lesson are sufficiently evolved to have come into this life of yours now from a state of consciousness that was quite peaceful and quite joyous. Communication with those we would call friends is unbroken. It is consistent, it is respectful, it is loving, and it is free. As you relax and read this simple description, think about, notice what color comes to your mind. Maybe there are multiple colors. Pay attention to them. What images seem to fleetingly flow through the mind? Notice them. Pay a moment's attention to them. For remember an ancient truth that we once gave you. You cannot imagine that which you have not experienced. For imagination is the picturing in the conscious mind. And that picturing must come forth from something. Mind, as you know it, can only picture what it has been. It can find ways at times to bring it back into the third dimensional experience, but that does not mean that it is new. As you were abiding in that state before coming into this incarnation, you were in relationship. Most of you were multidimensionally aware. That is, while you had a predominant color or level of energy, you were also aware that you were surrounded at all times by other dimensions. Many of you communicated multidimensionally, both with that of a higher frequency as well as with that of a lower frequency. Many of you communicated with beings who were incarnated in the third dimensional reality. And then there was a moment for each and every one of you when the decision was made within your consciousness, within your mind, that conditions were appropriate for you to again incarnate. There are many, many factors that attract the soul to yet again condense into physical form. But the chief among these is the perception and the thought that there is yet something left undone. There is yet some lesson that cannot be realized except within the physical realm. There is indeed a purpose that you as a soul would yet wish to fulfill. It is very true that some of you have incarnated because you felt compassion. That is, you looked down upon the third dimensional realm and saw its suffering, and you yearned to bring light to this dimension in which you now find yourself. Yet, even this stems forth from the reason or the perception that you must do something to correct what is occurring. That is a perception that many of you are aware still runs you. You look out upon the world as though you look out upon your brothers and sisters, and there is this compulsion, there is this need to get involved and to fix things. there is a belief in many of you that if you take no action, that somehow you are belittled. Your sense of identity, your sense of being is caught up with looking out upon the world and judging what is right or wrong, holding opinions about what ought to be done, and then often trying to persuade others to do it your way. So there you are. You are spirit, and yet you are soul. You are having a relational experience, and yet you're perfectly aware. Time does not quite exist where you are, for time is a unique and peculiar experience that is very much linked to matter or to the body. And you abide in a timeless state. As you look upon the conditions, you're also aware of your connection with souls that you have known before that are currently incarnated upon the physical plane. You are aware of and you can sense the quality of a resonance in their consciousness with yours, that is, with the lessons that you are longing to learn. A decision is made in the mind. It is not forced upon you whatsoever. In fact, we will share with you that the decision to incarnate need not ever have been made. That is, you are not compelled by any force outside of yourself to come into this dimension. Does that mean you made a mistake? Not at all. There can be no mistakes in all of creation. Just let that resonate. There can be no mistakes in all of creation. The idea of a mistake is a concept that a mind, at this point I'll limit it to a human mind, has created. A belief system, a structure of thought is necessary to have been created to make a judgment, to step back from the flow of life and say, this is bad, this is wrong, this shouldn't happen, this was a mistake. And yet, all there is the flow of life. And there is, in truth, not a possibility of stepping back from it. It's all a dream. It's all a hallucination. It's all an arbitrary, artificial labeling of something as this or that, when all there is the one mind and the flow of creation. Everything is connected. Everyone is connected. There is no one. There is only the one. So all of these statements that seem like gibberish make the mind spin, but as we've talked about, these are devices to help occupy the intellectual mind, or as Guy Finley would call it, the mechanical level of mind, to give it something simple and safe to chew on to distract it so that the heart, the soul, the connection to the divine might inform us or usher us into an entirely different experience of ourselves and the world. So there's just the first few pages of Lesson 17. Again, please notice the tension in your body as some of these conflicting and contradictory statements are offered, and understand that it's all okay. And I'll remind us again that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
You're most welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, July the 27th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment And I'll invite you to go to our website. We are making a few more changes. It's still going on. Hopefully we'll get it done here in a few days. If you find something that's not working, let me know, please, at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, N.org. And I was just taking a look to see if we'd had any questions from the app or anything so that I could present those, but it doesn't look like we've got any. So remember, you can do that. If you're working on the app on your phone, it doesn't matter what page you're on. There's a ask a question button, and it sends an email to me with your question. We present it on the radio show, and then I will email you back and let you know what day and time that we addressed your question. Excuse me. And whether it's a question about the app or whether it's you know, about something else, whatever, you can drop a line. So that's a quick and easy, and you, like I said, you can do that from any page within the app. You can do the worksheet actually on the website itself, and trying to get that updated. So if you use the worksheet online, then that may be a couple more days before it's all fixed out as well. So 563-999-3581 and press 1. We'd love to hear from you. It's a whole lot easier than doing a monologue. And I told Michael we probably need to come up with a book or something to fill in the days when nobody does call in or nobody pushes a button or asks their question. And but we don't have that yet. Oh, a hand just went up. 541, you're on the air. How you doing?
Good morning. This is Celinda.
How are you, Celinda?
I'm really good. I'm out in my very favorite spot, the garden. And as I told Dr. Tim, since nobody else was ready or willing to push a button, I'm just out here in the garden cultivating my soul as well as my plants.
Awesome. Yeah, we were, and Michael was out in the garden this morning too. So it's definitely, you know, getting your hands in the dirt and getting in touch with Mother Earth. It's definitely healing, isn't it?
Right. Well, as long as it's not too much for the body at the time, also that sun is excellent for any bacteria or virus to kill it off if it's a certain temperature, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're also getting your vitamin D and all of that from the sun, too. In some areas, it's been tremendously hot, though. It's kind of hard for people to get outside in some places.
Right. That's when you take the sprinkler, Jeannie, and you turn it upward. That's my little fan sprayer. That's what keeps me going because, yeah, it does. It really does. Larry and I also living in the motorhome without air conditioning, and it's in the hundreds now. Yeah, and we bought the motorhome before we found out its air conditioning was broken. And so what we did is we have had to be very, very innovative, including wet T-shirts and a whole bunch of things and multiple fans and overhead fans. And so most
can you not
survive.
Put a like a window air conditioner in one end and a fan in the other pulling it through?
No, and in fact we have come to the realization that we would rather adapt to the climate that we're in. So we make do. Fortunately we have a cover here. And they have a huge, a big willow tree right next to the cover. And they've got a sweet table, you know, one of those iron tables that you can see through because they're just a grid work, and two chairs. And we have now created our outside kitchen, which really helps.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and the owners keep trying to encourage us to come into the house, and they just don't understand when we say, they think we're dying, because they're used to air conditioning or they're used to, you know, their house is a log cabin and well insulated, so it's much cooler there than it is in our motorhome, of course, with no insulation. But, we decided a long time ago to learn to live with the elements rather than use all that energy, et cetera, to make it do what we want it to do. But then again, this is at least a dry climate. You know, we're not like you are back there in Virginia. I suspect it's quite humid back there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is humid.
So that's a different story. So did Ari Harin, was she able to come visit you yet?
Oh, yeah. I thought, and maybe you weren't hearing, I thought I saw you on the switchboard the other day, and I actually made the announcement to you that she had come over on Monday, and she opened up the box, and thank you very much, and that was really sweet. And she's always excited every time the mail comes.
Yeah.
Oh, she likes it. She likes it. Yeah.
I did too.
I said,
and if it weren't,
I thought it looked like a cow, and she said, no, it's a horse.
Well, it is a cow, but it can be a horse. It doesn't matter.
she says it's a horse. So.
Okay, so guess but, what, Mom, Grandma?
she loves getting things, though. I mean, every time the mail comes, she says, is anything for me? When she came Monday, I said, oh, you got some mail that came for you. And she was all excited, and she opened it up. But, you know, it's the innocence of a child. Like, she opened the box, and you had everything in, like, a bubble wrap or a foam wrap. And she goes, oh, look. You know, I mean, she was excited about the foam.
Well, great.
And I said, well, take it out. I said, there's something in it. And so she would take it out, and, you know, and she'd look inside. But, I mean, she was just as happy with the box and the foam. So she's, you know, she just loves getting stuff. So thank you, though. That was sweet.
Yeah. And you did find the little ceramic disc.
The
in the angel, right?
The little angel sitting right beside of me. And then she's also got the little oval thing that had a flower on it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was the fun one, because that was in the compost, in the chips that we brought to the garden. And I was digging through the chips to bring them to the pathway for the garden, and there it was. So,
awesome.
You know, blessings
well, thank
everywhere.
Thank you for thinking of her. Yeah.
You're welcome. Life is
so Michael's
blessing.
Joined us now. Welcome, Michael.
Oh, very good.
Thank you, dear heart, and glad to hear you're here, Celinda. How do you be? Sounds like the heat
good.
Is a little much out there, and you're adapting to it. Stay safe.
Thank
it's
goodness.
Crazy what's happening with temperatures around the country and
you
rain.
I know. It's all to help us wake up, Michael.
Oh, no question about it. You know, it's interesting
it's
you're back into the...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you go back into the ancient scriptures and you know, there's threaded throughout the whole of the scriptures is physics and the way that the energetic aspect of the world works and interacts. And one of the things they talk about is that if you're energetically in harmony with, you know, what they call the law and that word in Aramaic simply means the way things work. It's not the rule of a superior. If you're in harmony with the way things work, then you, quote, get rain in due season. And that we're intimately connected with this right down to and including the weather patterns. And we need to mind our P's and Q's to get that squared away and get back on track.
Yep. It's all in divine order. I'm learning that more and more. I mean, it's percolating down from my head more and more. Let's put it that way. It's going south.
Right,
down,
right.
Down, down, down.
Cool.
To my understanding. So, yeah. I think
sweet.
A lot about understanding now, and I really take it literally. It helps me get out of my head.
Cool. Well, any thoughts or questions for you today? And again, thank you, as Jeannie reinforced those gifts with Arya. She was quite excited and touched by getting those gifts.
And she's 4 years old, not even, 3 years old, right?
She'll be four in August. Yeah, another month.
Oh, perfect. Well, the little scientist is active and well. That's great.
Yes, for sure. Cool.
Okay, you take care. I'm complete.
Okay.
Thank you.
Lots of love and blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Miss Jeannie, to everybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet, so go for your intro.
I think Michael was planning to join us today.
He's not on yet. And Sarah's okay. Not on yet.
Cool. Well, then let's talk about forgiveness, the perennial topic of this radio show. And you know, recognizing that when we abdicate the throne, we stop recognizing ourselves as being creators. And give everybody else the job of making us happy, fulfilling us, taking care of our needs, but et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then that comes in the mind in the form of goals we hold for people. And, you know, if I have this old issue that's been around all my life and I say, why is this happening to me again? And then I point at somebody and say, and why are you doing this to me again? I've just steeped myself in deeper and deeper and deeper levels of denial. I mean, to think that, you know, the person who just showed up in your life is the reason why you're experiencing the issue that you've had going on your whole life long is just silliness. And when we look at the task we've assigned to that person, we realize, you know, it's almost kind of like we've given them a job. You know, your job is to make sure I'm happy. Oh, yeah? Okay. And by what means am I supposed to make sure you're happy? And there you have your goal. Well, you're supposed to do this. Form of denial, remembering that the definition of denial is that when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something that's moving inside of me, then I think the reason I'm angry, sad, afraid, upset, hateful, whatever it is because you didn't fulfill your job. It's like, no, you're angry, sad, hateful, whatever it is, because there's anger, sadness, or hatred in you that has not yet been forgiven. And chances are it's come from 1,000 generations of inherited propensity to blame somebody else for what's going on inside of you. And so you look at the disturbance that comes, the upset, the waves that somebody can make, especially if they're asked to be responsible for what's going on in their lives. And I mean, some people, one of the pseudo solutions to not being mine is just to raise as much hell as possible to obfuscate, to hide the real cause of one's pain, and always the real cause of one's pain is inside of themselves. People will go to all kinds of lengths to avoid that, and that shows up in, you know, you could almost say, okay, so the job I've given you is, and you should achieve that job by, and then if you ask yourself the question, why is it that I've given them that power? To do some self-examination, to drop into your own mind, just asking yourself, why is it that I gave this person this power, the job? And, you know, obviously there's some sort of weakness or deficiency in me if I think I can't do it on my own. So now I'm going to force you to do it for me. And so what is it that assigning that other person the task that you've never been able to achieve, you've never had happen with anyone in your life, but you've always found you can blame, you know, there was person one, person two, person, you might be on person 76, somebody else shows up, and you know that you're going to make them responsible, you know that you're going to give them that same job. At what point do you step up to the plate and take responsibility and grow into an adult? You know, they talked in the ancient scriptures about, you know, a child, I did the things of a child. And then when I became an adult, I gave up the things of the child. And you'll notice the child is always assessing blame. It's somebody else's fault. And if you, and to look at how powerful, if you could consciously engage your creative capacity, to look at how powerful a creator you are, to bring 76 different people into your life to do this to you. I mean, that's a huge amount of power. And if you were to just take a moment and, you know, that old saying, the brave dies once, the coward a thousand times. Yeah, it's going to be painful to look and own and process through, but do it once and you don't have to do it, play it through, you know, go halfway there and then blow up and blame somebody else for it all 76 times. You just have to do it once. Go full bore into what's going on inside of you, what you've engaged in that's robbed you of conscious creative power, and take your power back. And in a sense, it really isn't a matter of taking your power back because you can't really give your power away. But what we can do is by blaming someone else, we can hide our power in our brain's image of that person we're blaming. And then they show up in our mind with our problem attached as part of the projection game. And we pretend that they're the one with the power. But, you know, everybody was given the exact same amount of power in the beginning. Every individual has equal power with every other individual. But if we play the blame game, you made me, then what happens is we hide our power in our brain's image of them. And seeing as how our power seems to be lost to us, we think somebody's more powerful than we are. The truth is nobody is any more powerful than anyone else. Look back through history and look at the people who decided to step up to the plate, speak up and do something. And they all had the same power. And, you know, if you looked in the context of, you know, the childhood stories of that individual, you probably wouldn't see in many cases any indicator that they were going to be the person who would change the world. But when they decided to reach inside and take a hold of their own power and stop playing the game of everybody else should be doing the job I assigned to them, then reclaiming one's power from the hidden spaces in one's own mind becomes a very profound thing to do and life-changing. And we're here to support life changes. We're here to support people awakening to the truth of who they are, claiming their full creative power, and bringing that into expression in the world. That's the bottom line, the objective of this work, and that's where we're heading. By the way, I did get a note from Susan, and we're probably not going to hear from her today. And she did share that, unfortunately, things have gone off. You know, she's been sharing with us for a while what's been going on with her grandson, and you know, a young man that's been pretty severely abused in childhood by his father, and unfortunately, they've had to hospitalize him. He just kind of went off the rails full bore. And so if everybody would send and hold the space for Jake and for Susan and Tim, that they're able to successfully process through this challenging time. You know, I just really admire Susan for how diligently she's worked to consciously interact with her grandsons and to bring healing to those young men. powerful, powerful. And, young lady, we certainly hold you in our hearts and extend our love in your direction. And I invite everybody in the community to hold Jake and in a space where he can begin to recognize the root of his problem inside of himself, rather than blaming whoever's handy. And at this point, it's been blaming grandma, and it's been pretty traumatic for them, I guess. So just holding you in our hearts. And breathing with you, breathing for you. And so, Miss Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is still quiet. Have several people on the switchboard, so somebody press one.
If you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And if you push one, then we'll be having a conversation. One of the other objectives of this work is to support people finding the true empowerment that lies within them. And from that connected space of love to handle what's going on in their lives, there's kind of a little fraud that goes on in the culture that says, well, you know, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's like, no, that's not true. Circumstances happen and people are killed by them, sadly. You know, they die as a result of their interactions that are so toxic. But it isn't that those things make one stronger. It's that when in the presence of those highly charged, highly challenging moments, you stay connected to love and handle them from a connected space of love. That's what makes you stronger. That's what restores physiology. That's what restores our minds. That's what restores our spiritual nature. It isn't the circumstance that, you know, if it didn't kill you, makes you stronger. It's a circumstance that when you handle it from a space of active present love, when you learn to maintain your human life, which is love, and from that space of connected love, handle the events and the circumstances in your lives that otherwise quite literally might challenge your actual existence. Then that's the key to really stepping into a greater depth of strength and power, and to really recognize that the whole empowerment program is already within you, that it's part and parcel of who we are. And so the objective of these tools and each and every tool that we teach is really about weakening the states of hostility and fear generated by the mind, weakening those states through forgiveness, and strengthening, it's like coming from two directions. One is the weakening of the untoward energetic patterns of behavior. The other is strengthening the presence of love, the relationship with love, the awareness of who we are as conscious, active, present love base, and bringing about the results that you're looking for. So if there's a particular story, a particular experience of using the tools that you might like to share with us that might inspire someone else, that might show someone else how the tool can impact your life, it'd be awesome if you'd press one and share that with us. If you have a question about any of the tools and their use, if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? So we just go quiet space for a few minutes. You know, one of the things we recommend is that as you listen to the show, you keep a notebook, and as you do your work on a daily basis, jot down questions so that they're there for recall, and then put those questions forward. And as Jeannie said, you can access an instant, at least send your question instantly to us through the app. There's a question button on every page of the app, and you can just pop an email, send it to Jeannie. We'll answer the question on the show and then send you back an email that informs you of when and how you can access the answer, or when it was answered and how you can access it.
Well, since nobody's pressing one, I'll, without naming names, the other day I was working with a young lady, and she said that she a lot of times would, you know, hold the Bible, the scriptures, and would petition the Creator for whatever it was she was needing guidance in. And then she would flip open and read the passage. And she flipped to a passage the other day that was about Lot and his two daughters, and it was after they had fled from Sodom and Gomorrah, and they were hiding in the mountains, and the daughters thought that the whole world was destroyed. They didn't realize it was just their city, that there were other cities and other people and everything, but they thought that the two of them and their father were the only people left on the earth. And so they got their father drunk, and they both slept with him to conceive, to continue the human race. And the oldest daughter did it first and then convinced the youngest daughter she needed to do it too. So the message that the person I was working with got from it was that they needed to make their own choices and not just follow their power person, whether it was their sister or their mother or their, you know, whoever it was. And
right.
I said, well, you might also look at it that, let me open up my email that I sent. I said, you might look at it too that they didn't, unfortunately, they didn't exercise what little faith they had. You know, they knew about the Creator, and they had seen, you know, that the angels helped them escape and all of this, you know, so they had evidence that there was something bigger than them. But they didn't exercise what little faith they had, and they gave into fear and chose a quick resolution to what they perceived was a problem, too big for God. And that, if they had just had faith and waited, that God would act on their behalf, and that we do that often, that we give into fear of the circumstances and it leads us to make a decision according to our own abilities, and decisions often made out of pain or suffering or whatever, and that even drives us further from the Creator. And that I told her to go inside and listen to the still small voice to petition Creator for guidance and ask Rekha to guide, and then to go inside and listen to that still small voice. And I said, whatever choice or decision, you'll have peace about it. You won't be in turmoil. And that it seemed like a lot of the decisions that she had made lately was constantly in adding more turmoil to her situation. So do you have anything that you can add on top of that?
No, actually, I think you put a pretty good hold in that question in taking it to the next level and really tapping into a longer view of things. I think you nailed it totally and completely.
Okay. We've got 29 minutes. Somebody help us. Oh, a hand just went up, and I believe that it's Anne, area code 760. You're on the air.
Yes, it is.
Welcome, young lady. How are you?
I am love, and in the state of love, I am indecisive, so really then I'm not recognizing the love in me. But the decision goes along with what you just read, Jeannie, so I've been waiting. Do I, you know, chime in? Do I not chime in? So I did sit down and write the question for you, Michael, and then as I wrote it, I'm thinking, okay, I think I might have got the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. It's like in my situation, with this friend who, quote unquote, supposedly has some dementia starting going on. I see behaviors, but that's my perception. But it's also she's recognizing it herself, you know, from her own mouth speaking. And the granddaughter was down. The granddaughter seems to be the only one who's going to help her move so that she's not alone. She's in a trailer. It's not a great situation. Anyway, I've been helping. And I realized to stay out of the codependency, I need to take care of myself. And it's just like I'm learning, though, in the way of the mastery and in this work as well. Everything happens for a reason. So to stay out of looking at these as mistakes or, you know, like with Dr. Kim and the last thing I was saying, okay, it's love or fear. I was in fear. What's going to happen if I don't do this? And, you know, listening to Susan's situation too. Well, if we don't do this, what's going to happen? So I guess I'm asking what tool is going to work for me best. I know I need to stay coming from a place of love. And like today was another day. It's almost every day I have to have her go stand in front of her thermostat. I've already done some things. I put a little diagram and colors, and the latest thing I had to do was put stickers on because that wasn't helping. And now the stickers at the bottom say no, you know, but it's every day. She winds up with it 90, 92, 90, and, you know, set wrong. And during the night, she's not remembering that she changes it. I have to guess that it's because she gets chilly instead of covering up, or, you know, she gets up and she doesn't remember. And like from past experience, which is all I can go by with my mom, you know, she was in her 90s, but as dementia started to set in, the short-term memory seems to go. That's what we're told, right?
Right.
I don't want to overstep my boundaries. So as I wrote the question down, I'm thinking, because I did get to meet the granddaughter, she came, but she lives up in Panama. I know you're familiar with Florida, so they're up in
right.
Panama City. And she can only take so much off, and she's getting married at the end of October. So her fiance was there too, and I got to meet them, and they really seem cognitively helped out, do some, you know, Medicaid stuff too on the phone, you know, got power of attorney stuff, information. But then they had to go back, right? Or she had to go back. I think might be in Orlando right now. Anyway, I don't want to overstep my boundaries. I mean, when it was with my mom, that was one thing, right? I could do things, and she already had the durable power of attorney. And I don't want to overstep, but I think I'm leaning towards the granddaughter needs to have her name on the doctors, you know, make sure that her grandma, and I mean, I can do it from this, and that was her primary doctor and any other doctors that she sees, that her granddaughter's on that list that can have the information. Would that be the place to start? Or I need a tool.
Well, if a granddaughter is likely not very experienced in the ways of the world and medicine and, you know, elder care, and the fact that you've been there, I think that's a pretty awesome gift that you're willing to be there to support this friend of yours and the granddaughter. And, you know, it might be appropriate to have a conversation with the granddaughter of how much support do you need. I'm seeing some really serious problems, and I want to honor the fact that you're in the position of authority here, and I want to support that. But, I mean, there are dangers. I mean, having her thermostat up at 92 could be a life-threatening situation for an elder person who, you know, probably isn't properly hydrated, properly as people age, oftentimes the body loses the ability to mediate temperature. And so
that's
she could end up in some serious trouble.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I was
thinking.
And so
I asked the granddaughter.
So I know I'm on the right track with that. Yeah, okay. And that's
and
what
if she's not physically there, it sounds like it's very likely time to get her into some sort of elder care.
Right, and she wants to bring her up there. But again, all the stuff I was in the process of starting to help her sort out, and that's what I – okay, helping her – but still take care of me. And I could always hear, you know, Susan and her stories. That it's like, we got to take care of ourselves, yet we want, you know, this other person to be okay. And I want to stay out of fixing it. But I hear it's kind of confirming what you just said is that you need to, you know, text the granddaughter. I'll text her first just because I don't know what her work schedule is. And say, hey, yeah. Because not only that, she has a little dog that she can trip over easily. She's already fallen several times. She's 4 years, chronologically, she's 4 years younger than me. So she's in her, you know, low 70s here. And, but she's also had a lot of traumas to her body over the years. I mean, and I came across, I took the liberty because I did throw it out. She didn't want it. But I'm questioning now her choices. And I think the granddaughter does need to get a form and get her back, come back down here and sign a durable power of attorney or something. Because, okay.
And somebody, I don't know what age the granddaughter is, but, you know, likely, you know, not much more than in her 20s or so, and probably doesn't have much experience of any kind with this sort of thing. So I would think all of the guidance you can step in and give her, at least offer her suggestions, because, you know, how does she know what, unless she's got some experience there, which she may have, but not highly likely. I think it's pretty awesome that you're willing to be there as support. And if I were you, I would err on the side of offering more support and input and direction than less, because you don't want to offend and you know, let her know if any of what I have to say offends because you think I'm overstepping. Please let me know. I just want to make sure that this woman is taken care of. I mean, 94 degrees at the thermostat set up in the 90s can be a dangerous thing if the body can't, you know, properly manage its own temperature. So it could be life-threatening.
And I think that's what's happening. Yeah, because she doesn't remember that she gets up in the middle of the night and changes it. I mean, I was just over there, yesterday, and I left it. And so what she does is stands in front of it, and I talk to her on the phone, just like I did this morning. And I go, God, I can't. Okay, there's the can't. So I changed. I said, I need to do something different, you know, because we do this every day. But I do need to help find these papers that the daughter needs because, you know, we need some legal stuff, information for the granddaughter, you know, and she wasn't able to get that. I mean, she started anyway, but I agree. Yeah. Thank you for the support in that, and take care of me. So, go ahead, Jeannie.
I was just going to say you can buy, you know, probably even at like Lowe's or Home Depot, a plastic container thing that fastens to the wall over top of the thermostat so that she can't move it. You know, it might bring up some frustration for her, but it's, has a frame that mounts on the wall with screws, and then the cap just clicks down, you know, and that would keep her from moving the thermostat.
Yeah, I have in big red letters, no, on the bottom. I just remind her of that each time. I says, no means don't touch, because there's not enough room to write all that. I mean, that was my latest thing to do. Well, then my yes sticker on the side where the other buttons are that you can control, you know, the temperature, the up and down button. You can't see. I always ask her, does she have her glasses on? Anyway, that sticker came off, you know, or keeps coming off. So that's what I was going to do today, is do something different to keep the sticker on there, at least for right now. But that's a great idea. I've seen those. I know what you mean. I think they have them in assisted or nursing homes or something, so that people don't mess with the thermostats or something.
Right, exactly.
It sounds like.
But I like it. Yeah.
Maybe.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe really informing the granddaughter that there's danger and that she needs to get into some sort of elder care facility somewhere where she's got support and doesn't have to handle those things. Sounds like, you know, this, it's time for that to happen.
Yeah, the granddaughter realizes that she doesn't need to be on her own anymore. Because, I mean, I think I'll have a conversation. I'll just text her and say, hey, as soon as you can, call me. Because I'd rather talk to her, yeah, in person. And they did see, I explained, like, while she was talking to my friend, I was talking to the fiancé because he seemed to, you know, have the wherewithal, because, like, he Googled, you know, Medicaid, he Googled, you know, things when I mentioned those things. And so they were appreciative of that. And then I showed him what I did with the thermostat. And then I said, you know, and when I was going through some papers yesterday, we found she's misplaced the, you know, the remotes to the TV. She went and bought another one. I mean, she shouldn't even be driving, really. And she admitted that. She said, well, when I get moved up there, she says, I probably shouldn't be driving. I says, I would agree. Well, I don't think she should be driving right now either, but I don't have control over that at the moment.
You know, one other thing that might be a possibility is that there might be, you know, if she's in the city or in the county, there might be some county or city services that might, you know, send someone to assist her and support her, you know, do visits and that sort of thing to give her some additional support, because it sounds like she could be a danger to herself.
Yeah. She's got I think her fear, too, is her relatives have... has the dementia as well, or Alzheimer's actually, and I don't see that. This paper that I came across back in the 90s, she was in, I can't remember if it said severe anxiety or severe depression, but it was depression and anxiety. She had counseling.
Ouch.
And it was due to her first marriage was physically and sexually abused. And she finally got out of it, but she's also had a full mastectomy. I mean, there's so much stuff in her body. I mean, she weighed 300 pounds, and now she doesn't. But I don't see her eating well. I mean, I guess when I look at the difference, and I know why God has me doing this, because I need to keep an eye on myself, right?
Right.
The eating thing, and I remember that from taking care of my mom, that hearing that the senses are reduced. And even though she's only in her 70s, I think with all the traumas that she has had in her body, right, and mentally, that things maybe start sooner in that. But I agree with you. I don't think she's sensing, you know, or she senses that it's too cold, and then when she goes to change it, but she doesn't remember that she goes to change it. I said, it can't do it by itself. I mean, I know that for a fact. Right? It's like, well, how did it, jump up from 84? Go ahead.
Yeah, has she had a diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's?
Well,
you mentioned that.
Well, what happened at the primary, they did whatever the primary doctor gives them, she didn't pass it. So they did an MRI, and I went with her to get the report from her doctor, which was another month or so. So they couldn't have been too severe. They never called her. Well, then there was a whole issue with the phone and everything. But anyway, I went with her to the doctors, and the doctor was talking about the gray matter, blah, 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 blah. She has that report because I asked her when I was there with her to have that report. So I think I need to focus on that report. So today I called her when I was talking to her, when she, you know, I checked on, we were working on the thermostat over the phone, I said, now, here we go. I gave her more than one thing, so I will go this afternoon in about an hour and check and see which ones she did. I wanted her to call the vet because I think there's some issues with the dog, but I asked her to call her primary doctor and get the number for the neurologist. She was told in the report to follow up with the neurologist, and she hasn't done that. So I asked her after, instead of saying in my frustration when I hung up, I just said, okay, God, what is it that I need to do? What can I do to stay out of fear? And that helped listening to Dr. Tim's his show, because I go, okay, it's love or fear. When I come from a place of love, then I can do this with God's help. If I stay in fear, then I'm going to get frustrated, you know, and panic. And so I was able to switch that. But, yeah, I think she needs to get into the neurologist and then have something in writing.
If she has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, one of the things that some physicians are saying about Alzheimer's is they're actually opening up a conversation about a new dimension of diabetes, and actually calling it type 3 diabetes, and that it's a lack of insulin in the brain, and that the brain is not able to the cells don't function because there's no insulin in the brain to get the sugar into the brain cell to allow it to function. And there's a product that's relatively inexpensive called MCT oil powder that one can get. And they're finding that people who are in really severe condition who have this particular aspect of what they're calling Alzheimer's, that the MCT oil acts as a fuel in the brain, and the brain cell can function on this MCT oil powder without insulin, and that they're just making, you know, monumental headway. So it might be, you know, worth looking at if, you know, it's a cheap thing to try. It's not something that she even needs a prescription for, and it's just a nutrient. But if that is her particular problem, there may be, you know, a major shift in brain function just by adding this to her diet on a daily basis.
Yeah, and she, I just remembered when you were saying that she was given a prescription by her primary doctor to start taking. And I asked her somehow the conversation, I didn't hear or I got sidetracked, so I'll have to follow up on that today, is that I asked if she was still taking it, because it's supposed to be at night once a day. And I want to find out from the pharmacist what, you know, what is it actually doing?
Right.
The doctor.
Well, we'll hold the space that we'll hold the space that there's room for your support and that your guidance is, you know, on track to really keep her from in a space where she's taken care of and can thrive.
Yes, absolutely. And there is a program in town that hospice has. It's called Transition. So I'll look into that. Because it's, you can get somebody to come and even just chat with you, you know.
Right, right.
And,
yeah, just support.
Keep
support.
An eye on you.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so, okay. I wrote that down, Peter. Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, young lady.
It.
Well, we'll be holding the space. Thanks for your concern for your fellow humans.
Yeah.
We need
yeah.
more of that in the world today.
And it's a reminder. I just love how God works, because it's a reminder of that I need to take care of my own self. So, you know, but there's room for both here. So I see how Gary's going with this, I think. So thank you. Thank you for the support.
Awesome.
I appreciate it. Love you guys. Blessings.
Okay. All right. We appreciate you. Lots of love and blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Love.
All right, well, we've got about 7 minutes left, so there's room for one more good conversation if somebody's out there in the phone queue push one. Let's have a conversation. Let's say hello. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Are you using the app? Are you using the forgiveness tool? The app you can download from your app store on your phone, just type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And there's a piece in the app for children, for introducing them to forgiveness. There are two different forms of the worksheet. There's access to the commitment, the website. And we're working. And by the way, if you're using the app and you see something that isn't working properly, please let Jeannie know. Drop her a note. You can do that right from inside the app. You know, just drop her a note and let her know. And or if there's a question about anything to do with the worksheet or with the website, you can ask that question. Or if you see something that, you know, maybe you saw it on another app and you go, I wonder if this function could be on the Heartland app, and suggest it to us. Let us know. And if it's something that we can do and it adds support and enhances the use of the tools, that's what we're always looking for. So creative problem solving, creative ideas are always, always welcome. So if you're out there in Lucerne Land and you choose to offer support, please. Please do it. Go for it. And beyond that, again, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we cannot see you, is 563-999-3581. Call that number. You're listening to the show. So, Miss Jeannie, anything happening in the chat room?
No. Nope.
Anyone with a hand up in the phone queue?
No.
Okay.
All quiet.
Well, then in that case, I think we've got enough projects on go here today that we should maybe just let the show go for today and say thank you to everybody for joining us. And we hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. If the world needs it, you can give it. Have a blessed one. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.